This is a Dragon Blazer production.
This is Unsolved Comedy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Unsolved Comedies. I'm your host, as always, Kizea, and our co-host over here,
Stefan.
There we go. You also might hear the rattling of cats' collars. We're in the living room, which is not our normal setup, so the cats are going to be running around like crazy people because they can't just let us do our job.
Actually, two of them are sleeping.
We'll see. We'll see if it stays that way.
One's watching outside, the other one looks like he's sleeping.
All right. So, today's case is actually one that I like a lot. I don't know. I hate saying that about these cases because it's just so fucked up to say I like this case. But this case has a lot of similarities to another case that I want to cover. I mentioned it last week, the Alyssa Turney case. If you guys, again, could share this podcast so that we can get more listens, so that we can get an interview with Sarah Turney, we would really appreciate it. But let me jump over to the first portion of our podcast. Steven, what did you think of the coverage of this case?
I mean, that woman's an evil bitch.
I mean, to put it bluntly, yes, she is.
That's how I feel about this case. She seems like an evil bitch.
I do not
like her at all.
First of all, her name is Sandy, and unless it's Sandy from Greece, you should never trust a woman named Sandy. No, I'm just kidding.
Jeez. Well, I apologize to all the Sandy listeners of this podcast.
I'm just kidding. It's a joke. I have lots of friends that are called Sandy. I just, you know, it was a funny. I was trying to make a funny. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I'm just alienating all Sandys.
You shouldn't trust anybody named Kizea either. I'm fucking crazy. Like, I don't understand.
You're literally the only person I know named Kizea.
Exactly. Like, fucking exactly. Don't trust me. I'm fucking nuts.
You're not wrong.
Okay, guys. So, in this case, just so you guys are aware, we do have a recording that we're playing from the Unsolved Mysteries episode, because we actually couldn't find this tape anywhere else, but it's like a confession tape. So we figured that that would be something good to include in our little episode over here. So let's get to talking about the case. The case that we're covering today is the case of Lena Chapman, or Chapin. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name, unfortunately. I'm going to say it's Lena Chapin, though, because that's how I've seen it spelled, is Chapin.
Yes.
Lena was the second oldest of six girls. She had six sisters. Her sisters' names were Brandy, who was the oldest, then Lena. We have Robin, Rachel, Jenny, and Rosie. Those are her five sisters. And her mother's name was Sandy. Now, they don't talk about their father or their fathers in this Unsolved Mysteries episode, but it would be safe to assume that the girls have different dads, because what we learn about Sandy in this episode is that she's hella promiscuous. And
she's
that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is when you're married to a guy and you get tired of that guy, so you decide to go fuck his brother, and then you get tired of his brother, so you kill him, and then
here at Unsolved Comedies, we fully support, if you want to just bang dudes, by all means. I don't believe that there should be a
there's no such thing as slut shaming on this show, but
but when you're banging people's brothers,
while you're married to them,
we will slut shame. We will slut shame. You're a
whore. Slut shame cheaters. That's what we do. We slut shame cheaters. but all the other girls that want to just fuck around, you guys are cool.
Stay single. Go bang as many people as you want. Practice safe sex. You know, whatever.
But don't.
We're not gonna slut shame you for wanting to be promiscuous.
But we're gonna slut shame you if you're a cheater.
If you're a cheater and you murder people, mm-hmm. we're gonna slut shame you. I'm sorry. That's just how it is.
Cheating murderers get the slut shame here on this show.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. So we've talked about the sisters. Brandy, like I said, is the oldest, and Robin is the middle child. She is younger than Lena, but older than the other three. So those are like the oldest three, which is probably why we see most of them in this episode, because they would have been old enough to remember everything that happened.
Yeah, we really don't talk to any of the other sisters.
There is one person that's completely unidentified that could be one of the sisters. The way that she speaks, like the other two sisters, leads me to believe that she might be one of the other sisters.
Well, she says that it's her mom, but we never caught her name.
It's either Robin or one of the other sisters that doesn't want her name released. We're not sure which at this point, but we know it's one of those two. The first thing that we hear about Lena is that Sandy claims that when she went missing, she actually just went to Florida with some guy, which, according to Brandy, didn't happen. She said there's no way it could have happened. She had a son, and she left her son here. And she loved her son very dearly, so it's highly unlikely that she just left her son to go be with this guy in Florida.
Yeah, I don't think she went to Florida at all. No.
No, she didn't.
She didn't go to Florida.
I mean, she might have gone there for, like, a vacation.
She might have went to Florida because her mom fed her to alligators, but...
Yo! The new Carol Baskins, my guy.
That's right.
Fuck the tigers, man. Get the alligators.
The killer whore.
Sorry. Sorry. We're done. I promise. So, Robin Shoemake and Brandy Peterson are the two sisters that we hear a lot from in this episode. They are very vocal and outspoken about their sister's disappearance. They are 100% sure their mother did something to their sister. So, yeah. We also have Detective Rich Letchworth, who was the county sheriff, he was a detective for the county sheriff, or for the Dent County Sheriff's Office, which is the original sheriff's office that investigated Gary, her stepfather's disappearance, and also had a hand in investigating Lena's disappearance, if I'm not wrong. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. Don't come for me. Honestly. And then we also have Josh Delman, who is a friend of Lena's. We don't hear from him very often, but we do hear from him, so I thought I would put his name in there. So when the sisters, when Brandy talks to Detective Letchworth, she says that Lena's stuff got left out on the back porch until it was basically ruined, and her son Coulter was left behind. And according to the detective, that does not sound like somebody who wanted to move to Florida. That sounds like somebody that was murdered, and the evidence was to be gotten rid of. We also know that Lena was very positive. She had a very positive attitude, and she was a very bubbly person, and she spoke really fast, which I get that. I tend to be a very bubbly person. I tend to be... a very fast talker, and I try to have a positive attitude. And I know that people like me are often targets because we don't look for the bad in the world. We tend to try to look for the good. Would you agree?
Sure.
Would that be a reason for somebody to be a target?
Yeah, I can see that.
So they moved around a lot.
That's why she's a target in here, but...
No, she's not a target in this because of that, no. But I'm just saying it is a reason to be a target. So they moved around a lot. Like I said, Sandy was very promiscuous, was always fucking around with different guys, which was fine.
Including brothers.
Except for when she was married to these men, and she would then go have an affair with somebody else, and it was like a pattern for her. Like, she never, like, stayed married to a guy.
Seems like it was about every 3 years.
About every 2 to 3 years, yeah, you're right.
Except for with one.
She would get bored and just decide to, like, leave, or she would decide to, like, start fucking some other guy, in some cases family members, and it was just bad. It was just, like, even the girls say that the tension was very high in their household when they were kids, which I could totally understand. Like, if I was a child and my parents were, like, always every 3 years having an affair, or one of my parents was always every 3 years having an affair, it would be super difficult and super high tension.
Especially with 6 kids, it's gotta suck.
Oh yeah, because
you gotta have a new stepdad every 3 years.
Oh yeah, every 3 years. So Sandy's second husband's name was Albert McLow. I'm gonna say it's McLow. Don't know. Don't quote me on that. Don't come for me. Might be pronouncing that wrong. He says that Sandy was a very good talker. Very good talker. She could get someone to do anything that she wanted them to do.
Including brothers of your husband.
Oh, yeah. She was a very, very good talker. Very charismatic. He says that they got married pretty quickly after they started dating. And that the first 2 years were super good. Until he found out that Sandy had been fucking his brother Gary behind the scenes. And Albert says that him and Gary got into this fist fight because he was super pissed.
I wonder why.
He was like, "That's my wife, man. You can't just fuck her." And Gary was like, "But I want to fuck her. I would like to be her husband." Like, it was just a weird thing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I know. They say Gary is a good guy in here, and I mean, sure, maybe he was decent to an extent, but to fuck your brother's wife
There's a difference.
Pretty dark road there.
There's a difference between being a good person in relationships and just being a good person. I've met plenty of people that are wonderful people, but I would feel horrible for anybody that was in a relationship with them because they don't know how to commit. They don't know how to, like, be with one person. So just because sexual or relationship or romantic decisions does not make you a bad person. It just means you're a bad relationship person.
I think there's a universal rule that you don't fuck your brother's wife. I mean
that is fair.
That kind of lowers your I'm a good person status in my book.
The girls seemed to love him. The girls were very
fond.
Maybe
he was a good dad, sure.
The girls were very fond of both the McLow brothers. They were very fond of Albert. And then after Albert and Sandy got divorced and Sandy married Gary, the girls were very fond of Gary as well. According to the girls, Gary decided that he was going to move the girls and his new wife, Sandy, up to his house in Missouri. They had been living in Arkansas with Albert, and he moved them back to Missouri, which is the state that they were born in, to his house, which had, like, a farm and a whole bunch of animals, and it was on, like, some acres of land, and it had fields, and it was, you know, a nice place for kids to grow up.
You know, if we didn't get the couple bits of crucial evidence, I would not blame Albert whatsoever if he was the one that killed Gary. And I wouldn't blame him.
So here's a timeline a little bit. November 17th, 1994, Albert and Sandy get married and they move to Arkansas, which is where Albert's living at the time. And 2 years later, on May 22nd, 1996, Sandy leaves Albert for Gary. So like I said, about every 2 years she has to do something different. She's just not into it anymore.
You mean do someone different.
Oh, God. We hear from one of...
Call it what it is.
We hear from one of Gary's friends, Jeff Allen. Gary gave the girls chores, and then when they finished their chores, he would take them out for ice cream. So, sounds like a pretty good dad.
Sounds like he's buying their love.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that.
How rough had it be for those six girls be like, oh, hi, uncle, I'm sorry, stepdad, or... Like,
I mean, it's not like he was uncle. It's not like he was uncle for very long. He was only uncle for two years
before he started banging. Uncle started banging your mom.
I mean, to be fair, like I said, it's a really fucked up situation, guys. Yeah, like a
little bit.
This is the only part of the case that we can make fun of at all because all the rest of it is so fucking heinous.
I don't know. We'll see where we.
So
we do.
I will not be making any jokes on it. So if you hear us making jokes on this for the rest of the podcast, cut us some slack because once we let you guys in on a little bit of shit, you're gonna realize this is the only thing we have to make jokes about because everything else is so horrible.
So
Brandy says,
this is pretty horrible too.
It's not murder horrible. It's not murder your own daughter horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's bad. So Brandy says that she really liked Gary, that Gary was a really good stepfather, and that she feels like he taught her how to be a good woman. He taught the girls independence, which is very important for young girls. Because she said that it taught her she didn't need to depend on a man. She didn't need to be like her mother, who was always after some guy to take care of her. She didn't need to be like that. She could take care of herself. And Brandy says that that's probably the most important thing that Gary taught them. We hear from Andrew Sheely, who is a reporter for the Salem News, which I guess is the city that they lived in, Missouri. And she said that Sandy jumps from man to man, every 2 years, just about. She gets bored and, like, basically just information that we already know. It's something that they found out during their investigation and the police also found out during their investigation.
She stays a little longer with men that help her murder people.
Yes. I think that's actually the longest guy that she was with was a man that helped her murder people.
Allegedly.
But whatever. So Sandy meets Chris Klemp about 2 years after she marries Gary. And he has money, which is something that Sandy wants. Oh, I'm sorry. It was 3 years after she marries Gary. So Sandy marries Gary. And so we can see, I can't remember what month it was that she... It was May 22nd, so they dated for about 7 months before they got married in December. And then 3 years after that, in March of 1999, they don't have a specific date, but in March of 1999, Sandy starts an affair with this guy called Chris Klemp that she met. We've talked about him already. He had money. You know, money is what she needed. Apparently, all she needed was money and dick, and she was a happy girl.
I mean, that can be a lot of women, actually. Or men. I mean, whatever.
She's generalizing. You're generalizing.
I will say, they talk about how Gary's stepdaughters, you know, or Sandy's daughters, talk about how, it was Gary's friend. I apologize. It was Gary's friend was talking about how Gary was really hurt and broken up about her cheating. You banged your brother's wife. What did you expect?
I mean, yeah. What do you expect?
What do you expect? You thought this woman was going to be faithful to you?
Wait a minute. That is a really good point. You thought that she was going to just cheat on your brother with you, but then she was going to decide that you were all she needed in life and she was going to be faithful to you for the rest of forever. Like, you thought, like, and not to speak ill of the dead, but you thought that you, really?
Your dick was magical?
Your dick was just that type of magic?
This penis shall save her from... ever cheating again.
Oh, Jesus.
Magical dick.
Magical dick.
Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Okay, now that we're done talking about magical dicks, I'm sorry, guys. But we find out from Robin that Chris was kind of a twig compared to Gary, which would explain what we find out later was that Chris was super fond of guns. So Richard Anderson, who is Gary's friend and attorney, says that Sandy had a checkbook and it ended up being Gary's checkbook. So Sandy stole Gary's checkbook and wrote a bunch of bad checks and got Gary arrested. And at this point is when Gary says, I'm going to have to file for divorce. The cheating, I think he was kind of like, I kind of knew she was like this, so I might just overlook it. We might have to work on our marriage. You know, we might have to work on that. But I think when he was like, oh man, she just got me arrested and she's been stealing my money, I think it's time to part ways. But, you know, it is what it is.
I mean, sure.
So far, what do you think of Sandy? Let's just, you know, what do you think of Sandy?
Well, she hasn't found a magical dick yet. I can't say that I'm a fan.
I mean, like, if you didn't have the information that you have for later into the case, what would you think of her if you just didn't know that?
Well, you think hearing that she banged some dude's, her husband's brother and all this, that I would be like, she seems like an alright woman. Well, she's no. Okay. This is without the murder, without killing her daughter, she sounds like a bitch. I am not a fan of this woman as of right now in this story, without knowing the rest. I am not a fan of this woman.
I mean, okay, that's definitely fair to say, I guess.
What do you want me to say? Sure, maybe she loves her kids, but not this one.
She did not love her fucking children. You, at some point, and this is just me, as a mother, you have to make the decision to do what's right for your kids and not what's right for your pussy and your hormones.
That like, was I'm sarcasm. Sorry. I'm not saying that. I wasn't saying she loves her. I mean, she might to an extent, but
she murdered her daughter. She does not love her children. Fuck off. We're breaking into theories already, guys. I am so sorry.
I am not defending her in the slightest. That was a joke.
Okay.
I said, maybe she loves her kids. Maybe, but not one of them.
Oh, but not one of them? Oh, shit, Steven. Okay, so Gary decides that he's going to file for divorce. He's like, okay, the cheating was one thing, but this bitch has gone off the deep end thinking she can take my money, right? Which is, you know, fair to fucking say. So Gary then goes missing. Decides he's going to file for divorce, and then he's just gone, right? He goes missing on May 11th, 1999, 2 months after the affair with Chris starts. And Albert notices Gary missing at work. And Albert said that he never missed work. He couldn't afford to miss work. They had all these animals. They had six girls. He had daughters that he was paying child support for. Like, he couldn't afford to miss work. He didn't have the money to miss work. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't go to a shift, you don't get paid for it, right? So, he couldn't afford to miss work. And Josh Allen actually says that he knew when he didn't show up to work that they were looking for Gary's body. That they weren't looking for Gary as, like, a person still alive. They were looking for Gary's dead body because he said that that's the only reason he wouldn't have come to work is if he was dead.
Yeah, good assumption. Now, I am curious, okay? This is what I'm curious about. I 100% believe this woman and her boyfriend or one of them killed. 100% believe they killed Gary. I'm curious why.
Life insurance money. I mean, they don't mention life insurance money, but according to the girls, they moved from this place that used to be Gary's house literally in August of the year that Gary went missing. They moved from the house that Gary lived in with them to St. Louis, and they stay in St. Louis until the next summer, and then they move to a whole other town.
Now, here's the counter to that, though. They specifically mentioned that this Chris Klemp dude does have money. So, do they really need Like, is that really a big enough motivator to murder Gary?
I don't know.
I think there has to be something other than life insurance to why she would kill.
I think that she knew he was going to press charges for the whole
did they
bad
say that?
Credit. The whole bad credit thing. No, but if somebody steals my credit or my checks and makes me look bad for writing bad checks, I'm sure as shit gonna press charges, even if it was my wife, you know. And he said he was filing for divorce, so who's to say?
Yeah, he was filing for divorce. It wasn't like he was trying to stay with her, so there goes away the motive of I can't get rid of him, so I gotta get rid of him. Life insurance doesn't seem to be a factor, because she got with this guy who apparently has good money.
It was his family's
money,
though.
It could be greedy.
It was his family's money, though. Maybe he only got a little bit every month, or maybe he got, like, an allowance. You know, they don't really go into it. They just said that it was his family's
money. If she went to this guy because of his money, he's well off. So that kind of takes away life insurance. I mean, sure, it's possible she was greedy and she wanted life insurance, but I feel like there's something we don't know that is the reason she killed Gary. I think there's a reason. Now, there's motive all over the place to why she would have killed her daughter. But when it comes to Gary, there doesn't seem to be a clear-cut motive. And I'm curious about that.
I don't know. Like I said, there could always be something that we don't know about. Something that, because we never hear from Sandy in this whole Unsolved Mysteries case. We never hear from Chris.
Surprise, surprise, they refuse to be interviewed. Oh, I don't know if I want to be on this episode where everybody thinks we did it.
Literally.
And probably did do it.
They literally probably did. But anyway, Gary goes missing. And he's reported missing by a coworker. A coworker. His wife doesn't report him missing. He's been gone for 2 days. And Brian Martin, who is the investigator, or one of the investigators for Gary's case, he says that he goes to Gary's house to try to find him because somebody requested a wellness check, which is reasonable. You know, he's at work every day and then he just doesn't show one day. Reason for a wellness check, at least in my opinion. And so he goes to Gary's house and he says that he found one of the cows out. And he was going to put the cow away when Sandy and Lena pull up in the truck. And they pull up to the house and he's like, ma'am, is there anything going on that you would like to tell me? And she's like, oh yeah, I probably should tell you that my husband's been missing for 2 days. He went to Diamond to go buy a fighting rooster and since then has not returned. Okay, first of all, fighting roosters is illegal. So, I don't
know. This is what you want to take out of this?
I don't know why she would... I don't know why that was her story. Like, I don't understand. Maybe it was to defame
probably
his character?
Probably make him sound like a shitty person. But yeah, he went to go fight roosters. He deserves to die.
He deserves to die. I can't. Literally fighting roosters, man. But it is illegal, so I don't know why that was her story. Because we find out later that night, she tells the girls, Lena, who we find out later, already knows what happens. The cops do ask her if she wants to file a missing persons report, and she's like, yeah, I guess I should do that. Like, she's so unenthusiastic about this, which is fucking disgusting, okay?
I mean, how do you want her to react if she murdered him?
I mean, you could at least fake it. Like,
fake it till you make it.
Honestly, if a guy that killed his children and his pregnant wife, Chris Watts, can fake it better than this bitch, she could have faked it better. That's all I'm saying is she could have faked it better.
Well, she already used the, you went to see Fighting Roosters. Would you like this guy? He seems like a douche.
Yes, because Fighting Roosters is such a douche move. Like, yeah, it's illegal. Yeah, it's animal cruelty, but I don't think that makes somebody, a horrible person, because chickens are used for food anyway, so they're just going to be slaughtered.
My point is I think that's the reason she brought it up. Destroy his character. Make him sound like a terrible person.
But that's where the defamation of character stops. It's not like she went on and she was like, oh, he was cheating on me. Oh, he was doing this. Oh, he was beating my children. No, she literally just said that he went to go buy a fighting rooster.
You know what? Fair.
That's it. She stopped the buck there if she was really trying to defend his character.
I don't know how to defend this woman. She's a bitch.
So the cops ask her, they're like, hey, would you like to file a missing persons report? And she's like, yeah, I should probably do that. Yeah. I guess. Oh, no, geez, it's going to take time. They've searched the house. They get a search warrant a few days later, and they search the house, and Sandy's pissed that they get a search warrant and search her house. Because 2 days after the investigation, Chris moves in, right? So at this point, they're searching the house. Chris is already in the house, right? There's no clothes, and there's no property that show that Gary ever even lived there. So
he was a ghost. He never existed.
He literally never existed. Like, they took all of his shit out of the house. I already mentioned that 2 days after the investigation, Chris moves in, which is such a shady fucking move. This guy, this bitch gives me the same vibes that asshole in Patrice's case gave me. Like, she gives me the exact same vibes. Like, you don't even know if your husband's dead yet and you're going to move in another man. Gives me the same vibes as you don't even know your wife's dead yet and you're going to change the locks. Like, that's the kind of vibes this gives me. Like, it's just fucked up. You know what I'm saying?
Except for Patrice's husband actually showed up on the show to try to defend himself, where this woman's not even...
He did a bad job of defending himself, I'm just saying. Very bad job.
He at least tried.
Well, what's this bitch gonna say to defend herself? This is all bullshit. It's all a lie. No, it's not.
Oh, no, she did it. I mean, I...
Allegedly. We have to say the word allegedly.
Oh, I thought that was my part.
Allegedly.
You're the one that refuses, or is the one that likes to accuse people right off the bat. I tend to believe this woman's testimony, or her call to her Gary's brother.
Whatever.
But okay. We'll get to that.
So, she moves this guy in, and Sandy tells the cops, because the cops ask her if she wants to take a polygraph, right? The cops are like, listen, we have talked to Albert, his brother, and he is a little bit concerned that maybe something might be going on where you're involved, right? Because, you know, you're the last person that he would have been with, because he would have been home before he went to work, and he never made it to work. Would you mind taking a polygraph?
Yeah, Albert's like, you fucked my brother, now I think you fucked my brother up.
Now I think you fucked my brother up. And these people, like, this is bumfuck redneck Missouri. Let me tell you, these are the type of people that don't like people like me.
Like, okay, let's just alienate more listeners.
Honestly, like... These are the type of people, like, they literally, like, and I'm not saying that, like, it was a joke. It's obviously, I'm not calling these people racist, but it was a joke. But it just, like, I'm shocked that anybody had a lawyer. I'm shocked that Gary had a lawyer. Because it just doesn't seem, like, commonplace in this area, in this, like, neighborhood area type deal, right? Like, you get what I'm saying. You watched the same episode that I did. I'm kind of shocked that Gary just had a lawyer on standby that was just waiting for him. Like, and yes, he was a friend, so I guess that might explain that, but it feels weird.
I mean,
weird.
He had a farm. He was running a farm, so there's reason to believe that he had assets to be concerned about, so.
I suppose. But Sandy, after the cops ask her for a polygraph, tell them, if you find a body, I'll take a polygraph. Which is
that was nice
so...
of them to ask her, you know?
It was very nice of them to ask her, but this is so fucked up. I don't even know why, like, honest to God, like, let's talk about this for a second. Polygraphs are not admissible in court, guys, if you didn't know, because there's so many things that can throw them off. So I don't even know why they bothered asking her for a polygraph, because even if she had lied, then, like, it wouldn't have meant anything. Like, they couldn't have used that in court. It's not admissible in court. That's the same reason that they needed Chris Watts to confess when he murdered his entire family. Because the polygraph that he did, which stated that he lied, he was being extremely deceptive during this polygraph, was not going to be admissible in court. So they actually needed him to confess.
Yeah, I'm not sure why we use polygraphs. I think it might be more of...
More of a, like, manipulation tactic to get you to confess if we can tell you that you lied on the polygraph.
Even if you can't, you know, it's not admissible in court. If somebody seems to be lying, that's enough for you to go on to be like, okay, we need to turn our attention to this person because it appears that they lied.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But like I said,
it might help with the investigation more and to focus it on a certain thing.
I suppose.
Based on the report, even though you can't use it as evidence in court.
Like I said, I really don't understand why we use them, but I'm not going to fight that we use them. They're just not admissible in court. Fun fact, little tidbit of information. If you never knew that before, polygraphs are not admissible in court. And even if you fail a polygraph, you are free to leave because they can't use that polygraph to prosecute or arrest you. So you still have the right to remain silent and you still have the right to leave after you fail the polygraph.
You know, fun fact, I think this is our first Unsolved Mysteries case. We're not completely hating on the police.
The police.
I mean, I don't think the police
the
did anything.
The Popo did a good job.
I think they did fine, but, you know, you burn a body, it's a little hard to find.
Like I said, the police did a good job in this case, at least in my opinion. I feel like they did an okay job in Ray's case, the first episode that we ever did.
Yeah, that was just weird.
They weren't as forceful as they could have been, and if they had been more forceful, it might have helped the case a little bit more, but they weren't, so it didn't. But I think the police did fine. They did great in this case. Another case that we're going to look at where the police did really, really shoddy work is the West Memphis 3 case, which you guys are going to get 2 episodes next week because we're going to be doing that case, and because there's so much information to go through, it's going to be probably 2 or 3 parts. So look out for that. You excited for that, Steven?
Yeah, I'm looking. I mean, I'm sad that we're done with the Unsolved Mystery episodes. We probably got a couple months before we're going to get more. But I'm excited to hear your cases. Like, I'll get to go in on the podcast blind.
Yeah,
without knowing what happened at the end of the story. Like, we watch these episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, so I know the case.
Right.
You look up for more information as well. So there's some of that that's added on to these episodes. But I kind of know the juicy main parts of the case.
Right, the juicy bits.
So I'm kind of looking forward to our new format after this episode. And that's going to be with, you know, new cases. I've
completely
never heard,
new cases.
And I'm going to go in blind. I'm not going to know anything. Well, I mean, unless I've heard of the case before, personally, just knowing it and seeing about it,
yes.
I'm not going to know anything about most of these cases. And we thank the people
on our Facebook group. There's a Facebook group that we are both in, and we asked for a lot of suggestions, and we got a bunch of suggestions. So thank you guys. If you guys are listening to this podcast, we really appreciate your suggestions. If any of you other listeners that are not on Facebook have any suggestions, we encourage you guys to send them to us at unsolvedcomedy@gmail.com. Or you can send them to us at our official Instagram page, which is unsolved_comedies. Back to the main point.
Right,
we kind of went off on a little tangent there. But when the kids were interviewed, because the cops said they really wanted to interview the kids, so they interviewed the kids, and and Lena was the first one interviewed, and she was hella defensive of Sandy. Like, she was like, why are you talking to me about this? My mom didn't do anything wrong. You guys are jerks because you're interviewing us. Like, this is, why would you put us through this? Like, she was super defensive of her mom.
I mean, how would you react if you literally witnessed your mom being capable of murder? Like, you witness your mom killing someone? I would be, I mean, especially as a 13-year-old, I'd be scared shitless of mommy.
Yeah, Lena's 13 at this point, and we're going to find out some stuff that she watched and experienced and was a part of.
My God, I feel bad for the dreams of that girl.
And I cannot even imagine going through what she went through at such a young age. 13 is such a developmental age. Like, literally most 13-year-olds are worried about, I don't know, their first boyfriend. And this girl
going through puberty.
She's stuck, literally.
She's dealing with blood of a different kind, and I feel bad for her.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen. Thank you for that info. The girls are also very used to lying for Sandy. According to Brandy, I think it was that said that. She said that the girls were very, very used to lying for Sandy. It was something that they did all the time for, like, the smallest little thing. Sandy would be like, hey, we're going to sell them this story. Or, hey, we're going to tell them that story. So the girls were super used to this at this point. So it wasn't anything. When on May 11th, the day after Gary's appearance, she gives them the story.
You mean disappearance?
She tells them, if anybody asks, you guys saw Gary left to go get a fighting rooster, and you guys had spaghetti for dinner that night. If anybody asks, the cops, a friend, family, if anybody asks, that's what you tell them. And the girls apparently went with it.
They got blood spaghetti.
That's gross. We also find out exactly what took place that day. Brandy's account of what took place that day. And Brandy says that Sandy sent the girls to look for kittens. Like, they got off the school bus and they came running up to the door to go in, maybe to eat their snack or whatever. And Sandy goes, oh my God, guys, there's a cat, and she had kittens in the field. You guys should go look for them. And when you find them, come back. And I assume there was no kittens.
I mean, did they come back?
They obviously came back, but I think at some point, like, it was getting dark, and obviously, if Lena's the second oldest and she's only 13, then the other girls probably don't want to, you know, it's back in that time, you were home when the lights came on. They probably just came home when they realized there weren't
any
kittens.
Wait, that's changed? Children, you don't come back when the lights come on?
Your girl got her ass beat if she didn't come home when the lights were on.
That was, what, 3 years ago?
I'm 20.
So...
so, like...
not completely
15
off?
Years ago?
15?
Yeah. I used to play outside a lot when I was, like, 5 and 6, like, with Davey specifically. Davey's my boyfriend, if you guys didn't know. He was on one of our podcasts earlier.
How cute.
And when we would play, my mom would say, when people start turning on their lights on their houses, you have to come home. And if I wasn't home by the time people were turning their lights on, your girl got an ass whooping.
I don't think you're any of these people, girl.
How was it living in prehistoric times? What time were you expected to be home?
Well, we got to come home when the dinosaurs started roaring a lot and the volcanoes went off, and that's when we got to come home.
That's when you got to come home.
Yeah,
okay.
And we went uphill both ways.
Got you.
Uphill both ways.
So Brandy stays behind because, like I said, the girls have chores. They have... you know, all the girls have a little chore that they have to do every day. And I assume that the other girls had done their chores before school, since some of the chores involved, like, feeding animals and
spreading
picking
ashes.
Eggs. So the other girls probably had done their chores before they left that day, and Brandy had not. So Brandy has to milk cows, and she waits outside for a couple minutes, because her mom had told the girls to stay outside. And she's like, I know that Gary's going to be home at some point, and I really need to milk the cows. So she goes and she knocks on the door. And remember, this is the oldest child. So she goes and she knocks on the door, and she's like, Mom, come on, let me in. I've got to milk the cows. You know, I need my stuff. I need my supplies to do so.
And Mom was like, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin.
And, you know, Mom doesn't answer. Sandy doesn't answer. So what does any, you know, at this point, I think she probably was about 15. What does any 15-year-old do when she needs to do her chores? She doesn't want to get in trouble. So she just went into the house to get her supplies. She just opened the door and walked right in. And she said that the when she walked in, the scene was super weird. Her mom was on the floor, and she was scrubbing the floor with bleach water. And she was in shorts, which wasn't like her mother. And she was also wearing a ponytail. And Sandy was, I don't know if she was too much of a narcissist or too into herself or too I don't know. But she never wore her hair in a ponytail. She always wore her hair down and pretty, and she was always, you know, looking her best.
Well, so she had to clean that blood spaghetti sauce.
So Brandy said it was strange to see her mother in, like, shorts and a ponytail, because it just wasn't like her mother at all to wear, you know, that kind of attire. So, like I mentioned earlier, Sandy sits the girls down at the dinner table and she says, this is our story. And the girls, from what we've heard, stick to that story. Lena is told not to let the young girls out of their bedroom that night because Lena's the oldest, and as we find out later, Lena knows exactly what the fuck is going on.
Lena's not the oldest, she's the second oldest.
Or she's the second oldest. Lena's the second oldest. And she...
Mom gives her a gun, like, you little...
She knows exactly what the fuck is going on. She is fully aware. We'll find out later how she is fully aware, but Lena knows exactly what happened earlier that day, and she knows exactly what happened to Gary. So Lena is told to not let the young girls out of their room, and she falls asleep in front of their door. So I don't know if all the younger girls shared a bedroom or if all the girls shared a bedroom or what. But she falls asleep. You know, this girl's 13. She has had one hell of a day. You know, we find out later that she actually took part in this murder. And so she's had a fucked up day.
Yeah, a little bit.
So she falls asleep in front of the door, and Robin sneaks out. Robin is, like we talked about, the third oldest. She sneaks out of the bedroom, and she kind of, like, nudges Lena to the side, just kind of pushes her so she can, you know, walk without waking her. And Robin walks all the way to the stairs, and what she sees, she claims, is her mother and Chris carrying what she was pretty damn sure was Gary's body out of the house. She says that you could see the boots he had on, and he was wrapped up in plastic. What do you think about that?
So I've been trying to think about...
Other things she could have seen, obviously.
Well, not Brandy necessarily, but I'm trying to think of motives of why Sandy and Chris killed Gary. Now, I don't know if I believe this in any way, shape, or form, because did, which we haven't got to it yet, but unless I missed it, did Lena ever give a reason? Did she ever ask her mom, or did her mom ever give her some kind of reason of why she killed Gary?
I don't really know. We'll listen to the confession tape in a little bit. And we'll see if Lena maybe mentions anything, because if she did, it would be on that confession tape.
Now, I have no love loss for Sandy or Chris, for that matter. But here, what if Sandy found out Gary was doing something with the girls?
I mean, none of the girls have ever come out and said that. And
well, some of them were really young.
I guess.
I'm talking about the youngest ones. If Lena was 13 and she has four other siblings below her...
I mean, it's fine to assume that and to make that a theory, but we can't really...
Oh, I'm not saying it happened.
We can't really, like, assume that that happened. Even if we don't have any motive, we can't really assume that happened because there's no evidence.
I'm just trying to think of theories. Like, what reason did she have to kill Gary? Other than she's a psycho killer. But normally
it might have just
motives.
Been easier than going through another divorce. Like, you gotta think, like, back in these days.
Oh yeah, possibly getting arrested and sent to jail for murder.
Well, she
is
knew
so
her kids
easier.
Would lie for her. And this is in the early 1990s, so divorce is just now starting to become popular. Like, in the Charles Manson case, you hear in the 50s that nobody got divorced. You did not get divorced.
Yeah, but this isn't the 50s. This is
well,
the
I'm
90s.
Not saying it was
Everyone
the 50s.
Everyone got divorced in the 90s. It was like a rite of passage.
I don't think so. you know, divorce didn't start happening as a commonality until like the 80s, I don't think. Because yeah. Most people in the 60s and 70s didn't really get married because, you know, it was that whole free love, you know.
And you know, if this was the 60s, and maybe even the 70s, I would say that, but I feel like unless you're dealing with someone who is clinically insane or a psychopath or a sociopath or something along those lines, which I don't know if we can classify her mom as that. She did some shady, shitty things, but you know,
I guess in my head, murder.
There's gotta be a motive, like I said, unless you just like to kill.
It might have just been like preferable to going through another divorce, because even though, you know, in the 80s it started to become commonplace because, you know, obviously people were starting to get married again in the late 70s, and you know, people were realizing that they married these people while they were on drugs, and it probably wasn't the best decision to marry this person, and they started divorcing people. It wasn't really commonplace. Like, even when I grew up in the early 2000s, there was a huge stigma around parents that had divorced and children that had divorced parents. I grew up in the early 2000s. Like, my parents got divorced in 2010, 2011, and there was a huge stigma around me and my sister.
My parents got divorced in the early 90s, but I don't know.
She might have just thought it might have been preferable to going through a second divorce. Like, one divorce is one thing, but she might have just thought it was preferable to kill this man, take any potential life insurance money that he had.
Money is always a great motivator. I just don't know if I see it here.
And then on top of that, she doesn't have to put her children or herself through the shame of having a second divorce.
Yes, because she's really concerned about shaming when she banged a dude's, her husband's brother. I don't think that's it. That doesn't seem like, she doesn't seem to give a crap about jumping to men to men. And it's, she doesn't have a history of violence. She likes to bang dudes, and they said she seems to go straight for married dudes, which is shitty in its own right, but she doesn't seem to have a, she doesn't have a history. She's not a black widow. She doesn't go around just killing people. There has to be some kind of motive that she went in. There is a reason she killed Gary. The question is what that reason is, and that's what I'm curious about. That's, to me, that's one of the biggest mysteries of this case.
Well, one of the things I'm also going to bring up in a little bit is that I have something called Cassville Democrat, which is, it's the original news report that came out in 2013 about the disappearance of Lena. And I have Lena's missing person poster as well. It's so odd. I don't even know how to... Because a year later, Gary was declared dead. This all happened in 1999, if I'm not wrong. And a year later, he was declared dead. So, like I said, it could have been for life insurance money. It could have been. I don't know for sure. But it's just odd that a year later he was declared dead, and there was no evidence of that.
Well, they didn't find any bodies.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, Alyssa Turney has been missing since 2001. That's 19 years this year, 20 years next year, and she's still not declared dead. She is still considered to be a missing person.
When does the, which we haven't got to it yet, but when does Lena first call Albert?
Let's skip ahead a little bit. On the girls' move to, with their mother and Chris, from Cassville to St. Louis to Sligo. They end up in Sligo in August of 2000. Lena was said to work a few jobs there. I'm trying to find out. So in 2000... if Lena was 17 in 2003, she would have been 14 in 2000. So I don't know what kind of job she was working as a 14-year-old, but she was working a bunch of different jobs.
At 14, I worked as a paper boy. I believe around 14 or 15, my brother worked at a restaurant, like under the table.
Under the table.
He worked as a dishwasher.
Illegally.
So there are jobs, ice cream places. They like to hire minors. A lot of ice cream places, like local ice cream shops,
yeah,
they'll hire minors around 14 or 15 for a summer job and stuff like that. There's right. places that will do it. There's just rules about hiring minors.
Well, and it just, Robin says that she worked a couple of different jobs because she really didn't want to be at home with her mom that much, which is understandable.
I wonder why.
But she was also on edge and very distant. Robin says that she noticed that. Lena changed at this point, and she was very, very lonely, which I can only assume is from bearing the burden of a man's murder at the age of 13, 14, and having nothing to, like, not able to tell anybody, nobody to talk to, nothing, you know, she can't put anything out there. It just, like, I can only imagine that that's where her loneliness came from, because none of her sisters are holding this burden, like, you know, except for Robin, who is not really sure what she saw. She's just scared because she knows that she saw her parents carrying something big out of the house, you know, so obviously, you know, Lena is holding this fucking massive weight on her shoulders. And I can only assume that's why she was lonely. Because the same type of loneliness is seen in people that don't speak out about sexual abuse, which is another huge weight to bear. And I'm not saying that Lena was sexually abused. I'm just saying that this is the same type of weight.
Well, what if maybe she was?
I don't think
so. Maybe she didn't want to admit to it, but then she realized that
it's still
wrong to kill her.
I feel like she would have told her sisters that that's why it happened.
I feel like she would have too. That's why I'm not really looking too far into that theory, right. But
I just think that she was a 14-year-old, and she was extremely lonely because she was bearing something that had equal weight to having been sexually abused her entire life and being ashamed of it. She was holding on to having witnessed, been a part of, and an accessory
well,
to a man's
murder.
Mommy made
her accomplice.
Exactly. So, you know, she's holding on to all of this information and, you know, she's still very close to Albert. She cares about Albert. She cares about that side of her family. You know, so she probably felt extremely guilty.
Yeah, I bet she did.
So the next thing that we hear is from Richard, who, if you've forgotten, is Gary's friend and attorney. And okay. Lena, according to him, Lena confided in a boyfriend at some time that all of this had happened, that she was a part of this murder and how her mother did it. And, like, she confided in this boyfriend everything that happened. And he was like, you have to tell that side of your family what happened. Like, you can't hold on to this. They deserve to know that their brother, their son, their father will never come home. They deserve to know that. Which I could totally agree with. You know, I would much prefer to know that somebody in my family is dead and just know what happened to them as opposed to believing that they're missing and never knowing what happened to them.
Yeah, but at the same time, she's afraid of her mom. She witnessed what her mom was capable of.
You're right. But she does make the right decision, in my opinion, and she decides to go to Albert. Because she knows Albert very well. He used to be her stepfather before Gary. She knows him. And she decides to confide in him on June 26th.
I saw mommy kill your brother. Nah. Sorry, continue.
You're disgusting. So on June 26th, 2003, at this point, Lena is 17. She meets with Albert. And this is where we're going to play the confession tape. I'm going to go find it on my phone real quick.
She confessed when she was 17?
She confessed when she was 17 in 2003.
Okay.
She confesses to Albert. Let me pull up the clip and I'll play the confession tape for you guys.
All right.
Who killed her? And then she walked forward and said, and when we got home,
in the bedroom. She always seemed, but I was, because I looked through because I didn't believe it. I wanted to see. And she took her and she put her in the truck. And she left.
That's the initial confession that Lena gives to Albert, and Albert recorded it. There is another part. I have to skip there. But if you give me just a second, I'll pull it up.
How would the person go about doing that? I mean, is there any way that we could do that?
There's nothing. There is nothing with Albert left. There's nothing. And everything that was either left as a burn pile was put in buckets and spread all over. So I don't remember where they're at. I was there. I'm the only one that knows. I'm the only one that knows exactly what happened. But there's nothing left. Whatsoever.
Okay. So we've heard that confession tape. What was your first thought when you listened to that confession tape?
Well, first off, doesn't it take like a very hot fire to actually burn a body to ashes?
Yeah, it does. But you got to think about it. They were on a farm. They probably burned shit all the time, their garbage, instead of having it picked up because they lived so far out. And they had cow manure. And that shit burns.
I was going to do a search for how hot it would have to be, but I'm afraid of getting on a watch list.
How hot does it have to be to burn a human body?
Yeah, somebody might be concerned about what I'm searching. So you know,
your FBI agent is a little bit worried.
Yeah, I'm...
He's like, Steven, listen, buddy.
Just know I think it's very hot. I'm not doing
it. It's extremely hot. That's why they have to have special cremation ovens. Exactly. I worked at a veterinary clinic for 5 weeks every single Friday for 8 hours when I was the summer before my freshman year. And sometimes we had to cremate dogs. I was never a part of the cremation of dogs, but it had to be so hot that they could never actually turn it off. They couldn't turn the oven off until the end of the night. Like, they came in, I think, an hour or two early to start the oven up, and it stayed on all day in case they had a dog come in that would have to be cremated, and they wouldn't turn it off until the end of the night, because if they turned it off at all, it wouldn't get back up to temperature.
Yeah, see, now I'm curious how hot that fire was.
And Albert says that he truly believes that Lena was telling the truth.
I believe she is too.
He said that Lena was trembling, she was shaking, and he said that the way that she spoke, he knew that it was true, and he knew that she had been living with this since she was 13, 14 years old, and he knew that it was something she had to get off of her chest. And he said that he cared about her deeply, and to see her...
Well, this is technically his ex-stepdaughter.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like this is just someone he knows. This is someone he helped raise for 2 years. 2 to 3 years.
But, you know, he said he cared deeply about her, and he said that when she came in that day, when she came into his house, she was extremely troubled, and she was shaking, and he said at some points, like, after the recording was finished, she would cry, because she had just held that in for so long. You know, if we assume it happened when she was 13 and this is when she's 17, that's 4 years of holding this in. And she cared about, she loved her stepfather. You know, that's one of the things the girls all say, that they loved their stepfather, Gary. So it must have been extremely difficult, and I can't even imagine what she experienced just sitting with that and having to sleep with that every night and having to sit in silence when you're in the bathroom or at school or on the bus. You have nothing to do. You have nobody to talk to because her sisters are all younger than her, except for Brandy. And just to hold that in and go through that again and again and again every time you're by yourself and quiet.
Yeah. No, I do not envy this poor young woman.
Just, it's horrible.
She had to grow up real fast.
So, moving along, I apologize for that, if that was something that was a little bit much for you guys to hear.
I feel like if you're listening to this podcast and you've already seen the episode.
Oh, yeah, but I know, like, some things just trigger people. Like, you know, there's a case about the doctors, allegedly, on TV. They allegedly lied to this girl about getting her a new nose. And the pictures can be very triggering to some people. Like, the pictures, because of the type of, like, cancer she had skin cancer. And they had to take slices of her nose, and her nose was almost completely gone. So the pictures of her can be very triggering. So probably should have put a trigger warning there. I apologize if it was too much for you guys.
I feel like the trigger warning is you're listening to a podcast off of an episode of Unsolved Mysteries that's already triggering.
Some people just don't like graphic stuff, so I just figured it's okay to apologize.
I mean...
So the next day,
sure.
Sandy gets Lena a lawyer. And this lawyer that Sandy pays convinces Lena to retract her statement. And that then makes it inadmissible in court. From the day that she recants it, it's inadmissible in court.
Yeah.
So, Lena tells Brandy what happened to their mother. Or what happened, what their mother did to Gary. I don't know why I said what happened to their mother. What their mother did to Gary.
What happened to your mother? She's crazy.
She's crazy. And the next day, Brandy gets into a really horrible fight with her mother, which I can't blame her for. If I found out that my mother killed my fucking stepfather, I'd be like, I don't have a stepfather, but I assume you grow to care for those people. So I'd imagine that I'd be pretty pissed off with my mom, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So she gets into a fight with her mother, and Brandy tells her mom, she tells Sandy, I know what you did to Gary, and I'm going to call the police and tell them what you did to Gary, and you're going to go to jail. And Sandy gets real calm, real stoic, and tells her, get in the truck. Once Brandy is in the truck, Sandy starts to drive, or Chris starts to drive. Somebody starts to drive, because Chris also comes along with them. They head...
Based on the footage of the show, Sandy was in the passenger side, so... Okay.
So Chris then drives them out.
It seems like it was Chris driving.
Yeah. Chris drives them out to a secluded part of their little farm, their little ranch. And they put a gun to Brandy's head. And Brandy's in the back of the truck, so she said she climbed over the back of the truck into the truck bed. And she sat there, and she didn't know what to do, because she said she knew if I ran that they were going to kill me. So she said that she didn't want to run because she didn't want to die. So she sat there and thought, and the best thing that she could think to do was to climb into the passenger side of the truck with her mother and beg for her life, which is exactly what she did. She got into the passenger seat of the truck with her mother and grabbed onto her mother and begged her, please don't let him hurt me. Please don't let him hurt me. Please don't let him hurt me. Like, she's screaming. She's crying. You know, when the gun was being pointed at her, she was screaming for her mother, crying for her mother, begging her mother, and her mother would not turn around and look at her. Her mother continued to look straight ahead at the road in front of them. She wouldn't turn her head at all. So she gets into the passenger seat with her mother, and she begs her mother for her life. And her mother's like, don't hurt my baby, Chris. Like, she wasn't going to let him fucking kill Brandy. And he puts the gun down, gets in the truck, and they drive home. And she knows from then on that while she's living with Sandy, she cannot say anything about it ever again because she doesn't want to die.
Yeah, that's... Whew. Yeah. It seems like... Maybe Chris is a big reason for all of this.
I think so, too. I don't think that Sandy shot him. I know that that's what Lena says in her confession tape. I don't think that Sandy shot
Gary.
Gary. I don't think Sandy shot Gary. I think that Chris shot Gary.
And I'm guessing it's Chris that killed Lena.
Me too. Me too.
And maybe Lena just wasn't... didn't think to beg her mother, or maybe he did it while her mother was not...
I think that Lena was killed with Sandy's blessing. Because Sandy knew that if Lena went to the police, which she was trying to become more independent, we find that out later, in November of 2004, Lena's son Coulter is born. So she's 18. And Robin said that she genuinely fears that Sandy killed her sister. And the reason she said is because in 2006, Lena had plans to get married and to be independent, which was a huge threat to Sandy, right?
See, I have no questions on the motive for killing Sandy. There's two obvious motives that we get about Sandy.
One of them is obviously the fact that once she's independent from Sandy, Lena can then speak out as much as she wants about the murder of Gary.
To protect information. And the other one is they mentioned that she always wanted a boy, and
she had a beautiful baby boy named Coulter.
Yeah.
And they even say that, according to accounts, that same detective that we talked about, Rick, that detective said that there are some accounts from some of the sisters where even when Lena was alive and living in the house and working three jobs to provide for her son, Sandy would force Coulter to call her mom. So she was fully aware of what she was doing. And I think that Chris wanted to kill Lena because Chris wanted to get rid of the third wheel. He wanted to get rid of the person that...
yeah, get rid of the witness.
Exactly. And I think Sandy was okay with it because Sandy wanted Coulter. And she knew that if Lena was dead and Lena couldn't come to her defense, her own defense, she could file abandonment charges and she could have custody of Coulter.
Which she does.
So, the lawsuit hits in 2006, which is, at this point, Lena is gone. We don't know exactly when she died, but we know at this point that Lena is gone.
What? She went to Florida.
Court papers need to be served to Lena, Sandy, and Chris. They find Sandy, they find Chris, and they're like, Lena lives here, doesn't she? Where is she? We need to give her these papers. They're court papers. She has to have them so she can know when to appear in court. And they can't find her. And Sandy says, oh, she ran off with some guy in Florida. And she left her son with me. See, she left her son, you know, again, trying to character defamation. You know, so she tells them this. Lena went off with some guy in Florida, right? Which we know she didn't. She's not in Florida.
Unless she went down to Florida with her mom and her mom fed her to alligators.
We've talked about that already. So, Robin says that the reason that she fears that her mother killed her sister is because Robin freaked out when she found out that Lena was missing. Obviously, that's her big sister. You know, I have a little sister, and if I found out that my little sister was missing, I'm immediately going to freak out. I'm going to do everything in my power to help find her. And, you know, so Robin goes out and she printed out these missing persons posters, which are homemade because Lena's not technically reported missing until 2012 or 2013, I think. And so Robin puts up all of these posters, and she finds out later that her mother, Sandy, paid one of her little sisters $5 a piece to take down the posters that she put up, which is shady as shit. Like, I don't understand. Like, I assume that if your daughter was missing, you know, you have a daughter, if your daughter was missing and your son, her older sibling, was putting up posters of her, you're not going to pay Remington to go take down the posters.
Yes, my 2-year-old's going to take down posters, but yeah, I mean, no, but, you know, I also wouldn't have killed Gary or my daughter, so.
I mean, that's fair.
And, I mean.
Do you have a Gary?
Do I have a Gary?
Do you have a Gary? You said you wouldn't have killed Gary, so do you have a Gary that I don't know about?
No, I don't have a Gary.
No, he doesn't have a Gary. So, obviously, all of this makes Sandy look really fucking horrible. And Lena obviously helped make Gary disappear, so it's not beyond the realm of possibilities that they took out the one witness that they knew couldn't keep their mouth shut. Because Chris and Sandy are also witnesses. Yes, they committed the crime, but they're also witnesses of each other's crimes. Yeah. But they know that neither of them are going to come forward.
They're more... I feel like they did it together and where they kind of forced the 13-year-old to join in.
Exactly. So, in July of 2013, the court case takes place, and the confession tape is not allowed into evidence. Like I said, if Lena had never recounted her or recanted her statement, it would have been admissible in court, but as she decided to recant her statement, it was not admissible in court. Brandy does take the stand, though, against her mother, to testify against her mother, and Sandy and Chris, after Sandy's testimony, which is the story about how she was held at gunpoint and had to beg for her life, and her mother paid her almost no attention. Albert says it was incredibly powerful, and that some of the jurors, like, cried. Which, of course, you're going to cry if you hear about this girl being held at gunpoint and her mother just doesn't give a fuck, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty terrible.
So Sandy and Chris...
All of this is pretty terrible.
It's all bad. Remember when I said at some point we're going to stop making jokes and you guys are going to understand why?
It's
horribly heinous. It's so bad. Like, I don't even know how to fucking, like, explain to anybody how bad this is. It's just bad. But yeah,
it's always rough when kids are involved.
It's
especially
definitely
with how they're involved in this story.
Oh yeah. So Sandy and Chris, after Brandy's testimony, are found guilty and are ordered to pay $7 million to Gary's daughters. They aren't put in prison because there's no evidence, but they are ordered to pay $7 million to Gary's children. And according to the family, they've never received any money from them. And then in 2014, Chris and Sandy divorce. Sandy remarries and raises Colton as her son. She never mentions her mother or his mother. She never, except maybe to defame her character, you know, which, like,
Colton right now would be 17.
He was born in 2004. Is that when,
I thought he was born in,
or you're, 2004, not 2014.
So 16, I'm sorry.
16.
He'd be almost, well, 15 right now.
He'll be 16 in November.
Yes.
And Brandy and Robin did say that as soon as Coulter is old enough to understand, they will be telling him exactly
which
what happened to his
mother. I would
say
15 is old enough to understand.
That's probably why they came out about this. They probably spoke to him.
Yeah.
And then let
Can
him
you
know
imagine
this was going to be on
if
TV.
If they haven't gotten a hold of him.
Oh, fuck.
And he's like, hey, Mom, let's watch the new Unsolved Mysteries.
He's like, got this look on his face like, what the fuck?
Wait a minute. That's
Excuse
my
you.
Mom they're talking about. The fuck?
The fuck? It's that anime meme, Nunny.
Don't understand what you're trying to say, but continue.
People out there who watch anime will get it. Yeah. Later on, we find out that Brandy and Robin were allowed to search the former Klimp ranch. And the place where Brandy thinks that Lena was buried is a well. And the well is completely filled in. You can't even tell where it was at this point, right?
Yeah, it's gone.
And then in 2014, I believe the initial search was done in 2011, and then in 2014, they were actually allowed to take a tool that uses sonar energy and, radar to look underground, and they were able to take one of those tools onto the property and search a couple of different places, and they never found where any remains are.
Yeah, they don't really get anywhere. But, I mean, if you think about it, though.
This happened in 2006, which at this point is 14 years ago, which would give the body enough time to decompose to skeletal remains.
No, what I was about to say, though, is that considering we have reason to believe that Gary's body was burned to ash, there's reason to believe the same thing happened to Lena, and we're not going to find that body.
I mean, that's a good point. I don't think there's much point for a theories section, because there's no theories. It's just a matter of where's Lena's body. If you guys have any information about this case, please go to unsolvedmysteries.com or contact the county sheriff's department that works this case. I think her sisters would really like some closure.
I just hope Lena's ghost is haunting the fuck out of her mom.
Yo, I hope so too.
Haunt the fuck out of that woman.
I hope Lena's hiding her keys and shit. Not even
just annoying
purposely
shit.
Hurting her. Just fucking shit up so that she can't go anywhere. You have a job interview? I'm going to take your keys and you can't find your keys anywhere.
Yeah, annoy her until Coulter is old enough to move out and then...
And then do something horrible.
Do some shitty things. Yeah. Then fuck her up.
Oh, yeah.
Because unfortunately, right now, such a bad taste in your mouth to know that this fucking psycho bitch of a woman is raising this poor kid.
This poor kid that's probably been raised to think that his mother, who according to Lena's sisters, was nothing but a good person and wanted nothing but what was best for her son. He's probably been brainwashed at this point to believe that his mother was some kind of fucking drug addict.
I don't know how much, he was what?
He was three when this happened. Two or three.
Two when he his mom died. I mean, unless he's getting some kind of relationship with his aunts, I'd be willing to bet that Sandy doesn't even tell him that that Sandy probably has him call her mom. He probably doesn't even know that he's not Sandy's child.
Yeah. That's even a point to make.
No, this is a tragedy.
It's a travesty. It's absolutely fucking horrific.
Let's go, Lena's ghost. Let's go.
I just, honestly, I hope that the sisters are able to find peace. And I hope that her son one day learns about her and finds out what a wonderful woman she was. And finds out that she loved him dearly. And finds out that his mother... whether he knows about his mother or not, isn't the horrible person that Sandy tries to make him out to be. You know what I'm saying? It makes me so sad. The kid, I don't know if you guys have watched the episode yet, but the kid, he just looks so sweet and it just makes me feel so bad.
Yeah. To quote, one of the podcasts that kind of, for me, inspired our podcast, My Favorite Murder, Such a Sweet Baby Angel. That poor, sweet baby angel.
Yes. Like I said, guys, we're probably going to end this episode right around here. If you guys have any suggestions or any cases that you want covered, or if you have any cases that you want exposure for, please let us know. If you guys personally have any unsolved mysteries cases that you are related to in any way and you want them to get more exposure, you need them put out there because you guys, would like more information or would like anybody to come forward, please let us know at unsolvedcomedies@gmail.com or on our Instagram page at unsolved_comedies. Have anything you want to tag, Steven?
Well, there's my Dragon Blazer Productions Facebook page. There is my Dragon Blazer Productions Instagram. We're also slowly starting to put all my podcasts on YouTube. That's also Dragon Blazer Productions. You just search it. Search that on YouTube. I do a bunch of things on YouTube. I've been doing video game videos and putting the podcast on. So been working on trying to make that an interesting page. We are also on at Dragon Blazer Pro on Twitter. But we also have one more thing to talk about. As soon as I find it, if you remember right, we have a slight, not necessarily an update on the Alonzo.
Oh, yes,
Alonzo Brooks. But we have a Facebook. Someone I saw on Facebook who had some information, and I asked him if it would be okay if I talked about it on the podcast, and he said it was okay.
Well, go ahead and give that information then, Steven.
Let me find it. All right. This guy's name is Weston James, and he says that he lived an hour away from Lesinge for 5 years. Pat and Jerry Boone are the guys everyone is convinced did it, but are too scared to say anything. Some of their family members also made vague threats, referencing Alonzo's murder, and drunkenly confessed on another occasion. It's a small town, and the Boone family has a lot of sway. Some of the family sits on the city council board. They own the diner that's about a block down the street from where one of Alonzo's boots was found. The Boone family is very unstable, and people are scared of them there.
Yeah, so if you guys know anything about the Boone family and their connection to Alonzo's death, please contact either the family or the police department in that area, or you can also go to unsolvedmysteries.com, which is the official website for Unsolved Mysteries, and they sort through all of the tips they get there.
So, yeah, we got a little bit of an update. Not a true update, because this is more on the rumor mill and the possibilities type situation. But, yeah, so the Boone family seems to be the biggest suspects of the Alonzo Brooks case, which when we did the podcast, there really wasn't any suspects based on the episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
But that would make sense if everybody in that town is afraid of them. Yeah. And Alonzo's friends might have, you know, not known at the time when they went to that party, but they might have found out later that these guys were super hella powerful, and they might have been afraid to say anything, you know?
It's possible. But so, yeah, little update. And we'll try to keep bringing updates to past cases that we do, if we can find them. And if you have any updates, feel free to send us some information.
Yes, sirree. Thank you guys so much for listening to our podcast. We hope you have a great evening.
And don't be on our next episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
There you go, guys. Have a great night.